everyone, and a warm welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. I am your host, Henrik Palmgren, and we are coming to you from Sweden, Scandinavia, in the European Union. And wherever you are, I'm glad you are here and tuned in. The website is redicecreations.com, where you can find lots of news stories from around the globe and beyond, a radio archive, and also via our member section that is available to our subscribers. You have full access to our radio archive and our short films. And soon you will also be able to access a live audio and video feed that we're currently working on to get up on our website. So keep your eyes open. Things are progressing here. We also have a newsletter that you can sign up for and stop by and take a peek in our forum as well. Okay, so today we are going to talk about the Aquarian Age and the Piscean Age. What are the traits or properties in broad strokes of these two ages? What are the differences, and what will happen, or how does it look when the old goes out and the new comes in? Our guest today is Stephen Ruback. He is the author of The Quest, and on his website, sruback.com, he has a very interesting document or article called Beware the Aquarian Age, Get Ready for More Changes and Challenges Than You Ever Imagined. In this document, Stephen have basically listed in two columns the properties, so to speak, of the Piscean Age and the Aquarian Age. And this is what we're going to look at and talk more about here today. And if Stephen is correct, it might explain why some things are the way they are and why some things seems to be changing at this particular time. So this is going to be great to talk more about this. So let's say welcome to our guest. Hi, Stephen, and thank you for coming on the program.
Hello, and thank you for the opportunity.
It's good to have you here. We have lots to discuss, a very interesting topic comparing these two ages, and I find your article or your document that you wrote very interesting. And to kind of get the idea or the mindset here of what we're talking about, I just want to read a passage here that is related to this document that you wrote. Aquarian Age 2012. It's coming. It's here. It's not what you may think. Have you noticed weather patterns becoming less predictable? Every day feels like a treadmill you can't get off. Time is accelerating, whizzing by like never before. Social structures are radically changing before your eyes. Governments are running amok, trampling personal rights and freedom. We are inundated with misdirection and misinformation from all levels. Increasing earth change activity like floods, earthquakes, storms cause more and more damages. From the 60s song, The Age of Aquarius, to the projected end of the Mayan calendar in 2012, we hear bits and snippets about some sort of coming changes. A variety of psychics have been predicting dramatic changes for years. The hardcore religionists preach about the rapture, taking their faithful away just before the tribulation. All of our older histories carry remnants of stories about worldwide disasters. An endless string of movies have been made predicting all kinds of epic disasters. The planet has many pockmarks made by large objects that had created massive disruptions when they hit. The official media government line is nothing has changed and it will be business as usual forever. Don't worry, go back to sleep. The official academic line is nothing has changed overnight. All big changes happen over thousands of years. Don't worry, go back to sleep. Yet things are changing and it's becoming clearer each day that all kinds of changes are happening to and around us. Nothing will stay the same for the next 10 years, let alone hundreds of thousands. Everything in our society is undergoing massive changes. Whether we pay attention or not, something big is already happening. But what? Indeed, an interesting passage there from Stephen's article about the Aquarian Age. And, you know, Stephen, before we dive into the document and talk more about this and what it all means, I would like to know, you know, a little bit about your background and, you know, what your connection to this material is, basically. I mean, how long have you been interested in astrology or the ages of precession like the Aquarian Age and things like this?
Oh, that's been a growing interest over many, many years. I spent 20 years in engineering And I've always been interested in applying scientific principles to all of my experiences, not just those that we can measure with a yardstick or a piece of string. And I've been in, had many experiences that were not of the physical sort, whether it be dreams, foreseeing things that later took place. I had a dream back when I was a teenager that was essentially a movie of an experience that happened about a week later. The content wasn't particularly important in it as much as the fact that there it was in 3D smell-o-vision thing happening right before me. There's no common physical explanation for that.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, I have spent a lot of time delving into these various spiritual aspects as well, attempting to integrate them into a combination understanding between just the physical. And what it has boiled down to, in essence, is that our body is a transformer between the spiritual and the physical. Of course, I'm jumping ahead just one thought. We are taught as children, as we grow up, that the physical is true reality and everything springs from that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have then our entire perspective of the world and how it works comes from that. What if the spiritual aspect of life is the true reality?
Mm.
And what does that do then to our perspectives and how everything works? Well, it turns it upside down, inside out, and gives us a whole different way of looking at the world and the universe.
Indeed. Interesting. So in relation to, you know, the precession or the ages and things like that, were there something in particular that kind of got your eyes open to this, or was it just the fact that when dealing with a lot of the material that you just described, this is kind of a thing that comes with the territory, so to speak?
Well, it's kind of both. I had a little help along the way. Years ago, I was selling knife sharpeners at a gun show, and the fellow at the table next to me started talking to me about astrology, and at that point, the only thing I'd heard about astrology was reading the reports in the newspaper, which, of course, are so generally worthless. And he was explaining that if you actually got a real, live, in-depth astrological reading, you would find that they were filled with absolutely amazing information. And several years later, I found a computer program that actually generates detailed astrological readings. And I thought that was fascinating, so I printed out reports for all my family members, most of my relatives, just as a kind of scientific experiment to see how it correlated with their personalities and our interactions, and it was absolutely amazing.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, do you mind sharing us with what program that was?
It was the IO series for the Macintosh.
Okay. Hmm. Many years ago?
Yeah, it's currently available through many iterations. There are other programs also for different computer systems. It's the only one I know of that is specifically for the Macintosh.
Hmm, interesting. So, I mean, if you were to, let's say we're trying to describe this for someone who aren't that aware of all of this material, the Piscean Age and the Aquarian Age, would you mind describing for, you know, what that is and what that means, and where are we now in relation to these two ages?
All right. Well, there are two components to that, and that's a very good question. The zodiac, well, let's go back to the very first thing. A lot of people have trouble with the very concept of astrology in that, well, stars don't control me, and in that I think they're absolutely correct. But what the stars and the heavenly bodies do represent are bodies that respond to the energies of the universe, in the universe, and going through the universe.
Mm.
So what we're seeing is not the being controlled by the stars, as it were, but the stars, or the planets, are reflecting the energies that are flowing through and around us. So it's more like looking at a cosmic or spiritual weather report. If it's raining outside, it's kind of nice to know so you can take an umbrella or a raincoat when you
go. That's right, yeah.
Well, the astrological aspect of things is a categorization, sorting, a detailed analysis of all kinds of energies, both personal, interpersonal, relationship energies. And someone a long time ago put a lot of energy and effort into researching and delineating all this information. It's probably one of the few things that has come to us intact from the previous civilizations that have been on this planet. And it is broken into basically 12 distinct energies or houses or signs. Well, actually, houses are slightly separate from that. And they each have names, and they're connected with the various star constellations. And Pisces happens to be the energy structure that we have been operating under for the last several thousand years. I'm sure that you may have run across the symbol of the fish linked with Christianity.
Indeed, indeed.
That's a direct link to the Piscean energies.
Absolutely. That's right. And I guess the question here is, and there's so many different theories about this, of course, you know, when are we in the Aquarian age, and when are we leaving the Piscean, and even there might be a range of years here where we have a little bit of both, so to speak, and that actually seems to be what we're experiencing right now. What's your theories about this?
Okay, I don't have a magic number, but Michael Tessarian is possibly one of the most renowned astrologers in the world that I have certainly run across. And he seems to feel that 2012 is a right around the target time where we're in the midst of that transition. Now, you keep in mind that we don't go from one area overnight to the other energy. It's as we move toward that transition time, it's a gradual ramping up of one and toning down or ramping down of the other. Otherwise, I don't think we'd survive it.
That's right. Changes would be too drastic, I guess.
Yes. So the last about 10 years, we've seen a daily increase of the Aquarian energies. We're moving to a crescendo at the 2012 point.
Very interesting.
We could argue about which year. It doesn't matter. Plus or minus a year. I just thought it was absolutely fascinating that correlated with the end of the Mayan calendar.
Exactly.
So,
well,
other things.
Yeah, precisely. That seems to be a something that is marking something. That's absolutely right. And I guess that, you know, in the years ahead, we'll see a lot more change. Where are we? Are we 4, 5 years away, basically, from 2012? And a lot,
very
I guess.
Long. Not very long.
Not very long, exactly. Things are moving quickly and quickly, as I read also in the intro that you've written. And I mean, what do you think that is all about? By the way, that time also seems to be speeding up as this is happening. You know, what's that all about?
Well, that's one of the characteristics. When we move from one age to another, we're changing the entire energy structure of the planet. And as I have understand it from several people of very high spiritual acquaintance or operating level that I've known over the years, dear friend of mine who is no longer with us on this plane, told me 20 years ago that one of the prime characteristics of these times ahead will be the acceleration of time. And one of the ways of looking at that, Christmas is before us. What happened to one last year? How did it get to be December already?
Yeah.
It was July.
Yeah, exactly. Sheesh, my
God. So it's incredibly important that we go with our perceptions and learn to look within. One of the things we're taught along the line is to deny our feelings about things.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite questions to ask people is, how do you feel about this? Look within. And one of the most important considerations is if we start looking within how we feel, truly feel about things, and I'm not talking about just anger or not, but just a deeper questioning within, there is what I call the ring of truth. It's almost like a bell, something that you hear or see when it resonates with an inner truth, or it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the ultimate guideline, because as many of these systems go away and things become more and more challenging, that's going to be our only reference.
Hmm. So it's important to have a stable, how should I put it, internal environment, and you need to know yourself during this period, is that right?
Absolutely. Possibly the most important thing we can do is get rid of all the emotional baggage that we built up from our earlier years and earlier lifetimes.
And that's not an easy thing to deal with right away, especially if you're not, you know, into any kind of, you know, healing or maybe some kind of, you know, spiritual path. I mean, there are many people that don't even recognize that fact. And do you think that those people who don't observe that they are themselves of a, you know, have a spirit, so forth, that they will have a more difficult time in this transition period?
Oh, absolutely. They'll be stumbling around in the dark with no clues to what's going on and no way to reach for any kind of tools to deal with these changes of energies.
Hmm. One thing I want to ask you a little bit about is some of the, you know, what we might expect on a more, I guess, physical plane during this transition. One thing that you write about and that I mentioned pretty early in the paragraph that I read is about the weather patterns, and this is interesting because this is something very, you know, very physical. Many people can actually see it and experience this themselves, so this is an important point, I think. And a lot of people now are, of course, just pinpointing the fact that this is all due to this is our fault, of course, and this is due to global warming and our, you know, letting out all the carbon emissions and all that crap. But what do you think about that, and what kind of is your response to that kind of attitude?
Well, I think it's a very interesting way these things are coming together. Certainly, if you just look at the surface of the planet, when you take an airplane ride across any country, we have dramatically changed the surface of the planet. You got lights everywhere. There's roads everywhere. It's like ants have taken over everything. So we can't help but have some effect. The question is, how much is that effect? I would suspect that the nuclear testing that we've done is a greater negative effect on Mother Earth than all the other stuff, but none of it can be a truly long-term positive thing in that it is a manifestation of denial or irreverence to the Earth itself.
Hmm.
If we look at the Earth as a spiritual creation, it's sort of like the people who get deeply into the vegetarian thing. Oh, I'm not going to eat meat because, well, that's harmful to the animals and it hurts the animals and all that. And think about when you eat a radish the next time. Just because you can't hear it scream, you're biting into a living organism.
Of course, everything is alive. Nothing is dead, right?
Everything is interconnected. But what I'm saying is that these people that are beating the drums the loudest for the global warming things are using that as a tool to further enslave us in their little schemes and games of manipulation and control. I haven't seen any kind of these people getting together, putting their money into a serious, serious program to supplant the use of petroleum fuels, for example.
Mm-hmm. That seems very interesting, and this is also another factor that kind of dovetails with all of this. A lot of people are saying that, you know, the peak oil thing, oil is running out, and some people are saying that this actually also is kind of bogus to that degree. But the question is, whatever the fact is here, this is a, you know, a problem either if it's artificially created or if it's real, whatever. I'm kind of looking towards what are the solutions towards this. Can we find some new technology? Is it time maybe to get rid of the old energy, you know, politics that we've had now and actually begin to look at some other alternative energies? What do you feel about that?
Well, there are plenty of technologies running around that have been developed over the years. If we had solar panels on every roof, I get a kind of a charge out of people who say, well, solar is too expensive. Well, it's priced very high right now because there's a shortage of refined silicon. There's no shortage of silicon on the planet, but there's a shortage of refined silicon, and these costs are artificially high. But they say, well, say the same thing about wind power. Well, it costs more. Let's see, you put up a windmill and it lasts forever, and all the time it's operating, you're not putting any energy into it. Mm. How can that cost more? Mm. There's some serious disconnects in the way we're looking at these things. If we were serious about this, we would have a national program and all kinds of nations dedicated to putting in wind and solar and tidal power.
Mm-hmm.
There are just no end of possibilities. We could every stream could have a dam on it. We've got people who are dedicated to erasing dams.
Yeah, exactly. And they're
the real game here is let's play a serious game and let you and him fight. We keep people divided enough, then we can be sure and not go anywhere.
Exactly. That's absolutely right. And then we have all the other technologies that doesn't seem to get any media attention. There are cars that actually go on air now. Compressed air, basically. There's people that are saying that cold fusion is a reality. We have water engines and even steam engines that actually produce excess energy. And it's out there, and people can find out about it if they go on the web, But again, there seems to be... obviously, and here is where the conspiracy comes in. There is an interest here that people don't want this energy or this technology to become available,
Well, let's see. We have the petroleum interests and we have the power company interests, both of which are dedicated to centralized control of the entire structure.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder how much influence they actually have on the media.
About everything, I guess. I don't know. They probably own it. It's probably the same guys in the top anyway. Who knows,
Now, I spent some time working for a large petroleum company, and I've always been just a little bit skeptical about some of these claims, but I actually found in their archives a copy of the 100-mile-per-gallon carburetor.
There you go.
They had bought and buried. I saw it with my own eyes. This is not hearsay.
What do you...
Absolutely fascinating.
Exactly. So
why are we stuck on the piston engine when there are other engines that are more effective?
Exactly. It's incredible, but it seems to be. I guess this also relates very much to what you write about in your document here that we'll get to here shortly. That there seems to be the old energy, so to speak, the old Piscean kind of force that still is in control, it seems, of the governments and so forth, is trying to kind of prevent everything new from coming in. It's kind of a struggle going on here, right?
Absolutely. People don't like change, and people who are ensconced in organizations don't like change. And they've been known to fight things like that. Of course,
exactly.
Here we're talking about fighting a solar system, a universal and a planetary energy. So in the long run, it can't work. But in the short run, it can get messy.
Exactly. Hey, listen, I'm going to read here a few of these, the paragraphs that you have in your document, and feel free to comment or I'll, drop a question about it or whatever. But we can read this here. We have the Pisces characteristics here. First, we have the dissolver. That's a Piscean energy or property here. I'm going to read here. Most changes take place by gradual shifts in a given structure, dissolving the old into the new. Examples. Governments change their methods and priorities slowly over time. In 200 years, the U.S. has gone from cradle of freedom and independence to a cradle of welfare and dependence. Personal relationships develops gradually over the years. And of the same energy or property here, we have under the Aquarian characteristic, we have the disruptor. Changes take place very abruptly, without warning, dramatically changing patterns very quickly. Examples, governments will change quickly, especially in response to unexpected events. Personal relationships will move quickly to deeper levels or separation, bringing faster companionships and quicker divorces. And that's pretty interesting in relation to what we just spoke about, by the fact that on some levels the government seems to be very conservative and very scared of change. But for example, just look at how the U.S. very quickly changed all the many new laws went into effect, and you know, even the entire new Homeland Security Department was set up and new laws were put in, and that happened, you know, very quickly, right?
That was a dramatic example of that kind of change being imposed upon the older, slower, historical way things happened. And then you see the people admired in those agencies dragging their feet.
Yeah, exactly.
And the personal relationships thing is in our face. Divorces are up dramatically for many reasons. Part of it is a greater communication, which is another enhancement of the Aquarian age or change, in that the time of secrets is gone. And we see that more and more. People keep trying to hold on to their little secret things, and stuff keeps oozing out the corners and cracks.
Exactly. Well, that's a good point. And I think you had this in one of your paragraphs that you basically described that the Piscean age have had this. Well, actually, I found it here. I can read it here. Secretive under Piscean age. Secrets are rampant on all levels, from government to individuals. Example. Secret societies and government activities are commonplace. Keeping secrets is considered important and used as a source of power and intimacy. One partner keeping secrets from the other is commonplace. And then under Aquarian, we have a communicative. Knowledge is king. The focus shifts from secretive to open frankness in all things. Examples, there will be no tolerance for secret or clandestine behavior. Spying and clandestine activities will no longer be considered acceptable behavior. Partnership will be based on forthright communication and follow through. So that's very, very interesting that we can almost see that secrets have always been a part of the old structures, but now it's kind of coming to the surface. Many people would say that this is because there are more. People are trying to hide more things now, but to turn that all around, I guess what you're saying here is that this has always been the case, but the fact is that this is now coming to the surface, so we think it's just more, right?
Absolutely. The energies are no longer in favor of, if you will, are no longer supportive of all this hidden stuff. It's time for the sunlight to hit, and this just being shaken from without, from the very core. And the other thing that's interesting to me about how all these things work is I've put these together in kind of polarities.
Yeah.
Because everything in the universe is polar. They're all intertwined, and that's so we can go through each one and look at it. But when you look at the total picture and say all these, you get a whole topography. It's a whole new world.
Yeah, exactly. Let me see here. I can read another one here. Under Piscean, we have deceptive. Smoke and mirrors, calculated misinformation and errors of omission have developed almost into art forms. Examples, leaders almost universally deceive others and are often rewarded for it. Many personal relationships are based on deception. The most common personal deception is wearing of behavioral masks to hide perceived inadequacies. And under Aquarian, we have helpful. The overriding philosophy is, how can I help you? Deceptive behavior will be universally rejected as an example form of behavior. Examples, imagine zero tolerance of telling of a lie. Leaders who deceive will not last long. Deceive others and find yourself socially alone. Relationships are based on communication and knowledge rather than appearance. Any comments on that? That's a very good point, I think.
We see over in this country right now a lot of that action going on around the current presidential race. One little slip here or there, and you know, all these people are professional thieves and liars.
Yeah.
To some extent, no matter what. But the really, really big ones are walking a tighter tightrope all the time, so that they don't let slip. flip what where they're really coming from.
Exactly.
And this loss of secrecy removes one of the main tools of that deceiver. So this is more focused on intent instead of the tools of deceit.
And I guess also that they will be fighting all they can now to kind of keep these things secret, but it seems to be kind of failing on all levels. I mean, there's so much coming out now and again with the advent of the web, the internet. It's becoming more and more easy to you know, expose people, and people who actually have some kind of inside information or want to reveal something can basically just put up a website and tell the world about it, you know?
Absolutely, and that applies to misinformation that people put out as well.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. That's absolutely right.
So all of these things have a double-edged sword. There's so many little things that come out of this. Just like, as I mentioned, we're in a polar universe. Everything has a black and a white, a dark and a light, opposites.
Mm-hmm.
And our challenge is to learn to recognize those opposites and build a balance.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what one person considers evil, another one would consider virtue.
Yeah.
So much is in a matter of perception, and every challenge that we have ultimately is finding a balance.
Totally agree with that one. It seems to be very, very black and white in the world today, and I guess, again, that I don't know if it also is a mentality or a kind of frame of mind that is connected with the Piscean age and people who are, I guess, more inclined towards the new incoming or whatever, that either is born in or are changing with the new energies. That they're kind of
might be just the new awareness and the communication of, wait a minute, this isn't as black as it looks, and this isn't as white as it looks. What
yeah.
about, I think, just that interrogation, that quest for, all right, what's really going on here is beginning to open people's eyes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Then you have another one here that I found very, very interesting and very much actually connected with religion to all of this, especially Christianity. Under Piscean, we have sympathetic self-sacrifice. Sacrifice is considered a virtue. Victimhood is widely accepted, especially when played to sympathies of others. Examples, the very fabric of our society has become based on giving to others. Charities abound. Be as greedy as you want, but give a small part of your gain to others in visible ways to make everything okay. Self-sacrifice is considered a virtue. We are surrounded with glowing stories of about the virtues of the sacrificing parent, child, spouse, etc. And under Aquarian, we have friendly yet impersonal sacrifices. Recognized for its destructive power, the emphasis will shift from gifts to opening opportunity and self-responsibility. Example, sacrifice is no longer associated with love. The entire nature of religion and philosophy will change dramatically. A person sacrificing themselves for another will no longer be considered the hero, but will be frowned upon. You got a problem? Then fix it. Here's how to find a solution. Come back when you've done it. I think that's a great, you know, a very important paragraph and a key thing. Any comments on that one?
Oh, yes. One of the greatest misnomers in the world is equating sacrifice with love, which has been used to manipulate and control people for many, many, many years. Sacrifice is simply a self-destructive action that is based on low self-esteem. You're sacrificing part of yourself. Now, there are so many gray areas in there. A given act may be a sacrifice or a loving act, depending on the one perspective from the person doing it. It is not a matter of the act itself.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
Give
you an example. You are hungry. Should I give you part of my body to eat as a sandwich?
Exactly. No, that's not a good idea.
Not at all. So when we are lauded for sending our young folks out into some sort of a war based on greed and manipulation, as all wars somehow seem to be,
yep.
Where is the honor and glory in that, beyond the imaginings the propagandists.
Mm, yeah, exactly. And it's also, I guess, as you mentioned here in this paragraph, that this is not about, you know, helping others and things like this. This is about, you know, not giving away yourself and your entire life in order to, I guess it's more of a, if everyone actually do take care of themselves in the first place, a lot more, you know, we wouldn't end up in a lot of situations that we have today, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of people use victimhood as a way to manipulate other people. Oh, I'm a victim. Please help me.
Yeah.
Well, get up off your butt and go to work.
Yeah.
I've been unemployed for 15 years. I could mope around and sit on a street corner somewhere, or I'd say, okay, I'm going to go out and see what kind of business I can develop to help some other people and make a fair income in exchange.
Mm.
Let me give you another more mundane example of the sacrifice thing, get away from the extreme. Let's say you have an aged aunt in the hospital, and this is someone whose relationship has not been too wonderful. She's a crotchety old crone, and you have never enjoyed spending 1 minute with her, and you go visit her because your mother or father or some inner programming says, well, you've got to do it. And you go and you hate every minute of it. You spend the next 2 weeks complaining to everybody in the world about it, but you did it because you were supposed to.
Mm, yeah.
That was a sacrifice of your time and energy. You could have gone to visit the aunt because you wanted to spread some love in her life, irrespective of the fact that she was incapable of absorbing it directly.
Mm. Hmm.
And it's the same act, but comes from a totally different perspective.
Mm, yeah, yeah, that's absolutely right. And again, I have this a little bit also connect with the next one here I want to read, and this is a very important one about
how they kind of flow and are intertwined.
Exactly, very much so, very much so. This is about idolizer and a worshipper, and this is under Piscean again here. Society is filled with all kinds of idols, from rock stars to the rich and powerful. Worshipping as a form of securing power is rampant. The position is more important than performance. Examples, celebrities are sheared in spite of, I actually don't know this word here, philandering, right?
Yes, okay. All their affairs and social destructive behavior.
Okay, okay. Misinformation rules, idolizing partnership eventually disappoint. And under Aquarian, we have know, then understand. People will be recognized for who they are. Position itself will have little value. The focus will shift to the knowledge and skill itself rather than the personality involved. Examples, leaders will not be able to hide beneath their image. Knowledge and performance will be the universal measure of interest and success. And I think that one is also, you know, very, very important, you know. There's too many people giving away their power to someone else and, you know, they're not thinking for themselves, you know.
I spent many years working in the corporate environment, and invariably there would be someone who wanted to credit for the good stuff and somebody else, or maybe even the same person, who wanted to dump blame on somebody else. And it was always a credit and blame game, never focused actually on getting the job done. In fact, the people who actually got the job done were usually reviled in one way or another or put down because then those in charge would have to actually give credit to somebody else, and that was never allowed. The real importance here is discernment, as that's one of the things that we have neglected a lot on this planet. We buy into all kinds of things people say, whether it's be prejudice or whatever it is, but we just go the simple route, stick with the simple judgments. For example, we call very typically many people our friends. But it has been said many times in years past that if you, at the end of your life, can count on your hand, on the fingers of one hand, truly great friends, you are greatly blessed.
Hmm.
So those people that have dozens of friends have not yet had a shakeout in their life to find out that they are friendly acquaintances, which is a whole world different than a friend. Now, I know three ways you can determine real friends.
Mm-hmm.
One is an extended hospital stay, another is a cross-country move, and another is a divorce. I don't recommend any of them.
Right. That's good. You know, I want to return to that idea of leaders and followers a little bit. You know, do people need leaders? I mean, what's the thing with that? Because that seems to be the case right now. And people are constantly looking for someone, you know, to telling them what the deal is, basically.
Well, let's see now. We have, as a society, and at part of the coming into the dysfunctionality of this planet, for that matter, have picked up the judgment that we are inadequate.
Hmm.
Okay?
Hmm.
So when you stamp the word inadequate on your forehead and an idea comes through from the inner self, it automatically goes in the wastebasket.
Hmm.
Because it's automatically labeled as inadequate. That's how people are consider themselves not very creative. So as they have bought into, and this is probably the number one biggest piece of emotional baggage that we have to get rid of, as we have bought into this level of inadequacy, which varies from individual to individual, we most certainly need to turn outward for answers when all the answers are within.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yep, definitely.
Because we've labeled the within as being anywhere from inadequate to evil.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly. So exactly.
Let's carry that one step further, because mm-hmm. this brings up a picture that is very important to this whole thing and may tie in with some other folks. Can we basically agree in general concept that this universe was created by some creative source?
Are you asking me if we could ever do this on the planet, you mean? Like a race?
Well, if we can generally agree theoretically in concept that I think most of us can find this level of agreement that this universe and this planet and the solar system was created by some sort of a creative source.
I would agree with you, but I could find a lot of people that wouldn't, I guess.
Well, there are a number of people who are busy trying to deny the creation thing, and they're also trying to deny the second law of thermodynamics, which,
sure.
which says that all things go from a state of order to a state of disorder, which means very simply and very scientifically that you must have creative input for there to be order.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, if we deny God, then we can somehow boost our low self-esteem feelings by trying to make ourselves look better than what's around us.
Hmm.
So that's another manifestation of the super low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's get back to this simple train of thought. So we start with this basic concept or assumption, if you will, or projection or theory,
mm-hmm.
that this is all created. Now, I have looked under microscopes, and I have looked through telescopes, and I have, from an engineering standpoint, looked at this world from wide range of magnification, and have never seen any example of anything that was not an absolutely awesome illustration of order, planning, and intricate design.
Yeah.
So is it reasonable then to make the next statement that the creator, whoever, whatever, a lot of the argument gets into is this an old man in a chair in the sky or,
yeah.
or the nature of this creator, and that's a separate discussion for this purpose. Is it reasonable to conclude from our observations, from our experiences, which are the only way we learn, that creator did a pretty good job?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then can we also agree that creator created us as individuals?
Yep, it certainly seems.
Okay,
seems like
on that logic standpoint, then, when we label ourselves as unlovable, inadequate, or in any way negative, we are saying the creator did a lousy job.
Exactly, yep, that's right.
That, I am here to declare to you, is the original sin.
Hmm, interesting.
And everything of our emotional baggage revolves around that essence.
That's very interesting. I would extend it even further to actually say that the thing that we are experiencing and living in, the time that we are in and the experience that we have, are actually in total balance with that creator idea that we had from the beginning, and of course we are partially you know responsible because we have made certain choices and so forth that has brought us to this situation. But if we really think about it, I see nothing wrong in the way things are now. I don't know if you would agree with that or not.
Well, they're like the things that get us into further amplifying or adding to these judgments against self. We do something and it doesn't come out the way we thought it would. Therefore, we must have made a mistake. Well, we may have misjudged. We are in the process of learning.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Instead of beating ourselves up because it didn't work, we go back to, okay, what did I not do right here? Did I set the wrong intent?
Hmm.
Which brings up the absolute essence. Most of us have been taught somewhere along the line to control things.
Hmm.
And we spend a lot of time trying to control people, control situations, control ourselves. And all our experience shows us that control does not work.
Yeah. Hmm.
What does work is setting the intent, visualizing in your mind the picture, with clarity, exactly what you want to see, and then activating the intent. That's what the emotions are for. Activate that intent with desire.
Hmm.
And then stand back and allow it to happen.
Hmm. Very good point. Very good point indeed. And again, to kind of highlight that, I think mistakes and things that we view as mistakes are actually an opportunity to learn and progress, and foremost of everything, be thankful that you're aware that you actually have made the mistake, that because that opens up the opportunity to finally change or do something about it, you know?
Absolutely. Now, we're this you know, we've got an inner drive hardwired, built into us to strive for perfection, because we are indeed created from that source of perfection, but we've fallen into the hole with this denial of oneself. And people talk about fear. You wanna get some fear in the face, you look deeply within and see how absolutely awesome and powerful being that you are.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest fears we have, recognizing that. And that's one of the really fun things in working with people and helping them heal, is they begin to get a glimmer of that in acceptance. And that is absolutely awesome.
Absolutely, totally agree. Hey, Stephen, I think that this would be a perfect place to actually take a little break here and then continue in our subscriber section. We have much more to talk about, but I want to kind of leave, you know, the last few minutes here open to you, so you can tell people about your website and also, of course, about your book, The Quest. We haven't talked that much about your book in this segment. Hopefully, we can get to that in our next one here. But as I said, the last few minutes here are for you, so to speak.
Okay, wonderful. The astrological outline that we have been describing, I have an abbreviated version on my website, which is srubach.com. And that is available free for download. I have a more expanded version that goes into a lot more detail of explanation and amplification of how these things are affecting us and such. And that's available at superknowledgemart.com. That's superknowledgemart.com. It's one word, and it's available for download for a simple price of $3.
Excellent. So two websites to keep in mind here, superknowledgemart.com and also srubach.com. That will get you a lot more information about Stephen's books and so forth. Right. So we're going to take here a little break and then continue with Stephen in the subscriber section. As I said, we have a lot more interesting points from the Aquarian document to discuss that we didn't have time for here in the first segment. So I hope you join us. Just head on over to redeyescreations.com to find out how to sign up and tune in. And thanks for listening to this segment, and thanks to Fredrik in the control room. But subscribers, we'll see you on the other side of this break.